Welcome to the Words with Jem podcast. After a longer than intended break, we bring you an extract from Lisa Perrat's novel Spirit of Lost Angels, read by the author. Set in revolutionary France, the novel is a testament to the courage of women facing tragedy, betrayal, and insanity in a world where their gift can be their curse.
Spirit of Lost Angels, Chapter 3. It was early in the autumn of 1772 when Leon Bruyère tapped on the church room door. I was practicing my letters and supposed he'd come to tell us another journeyman was passing through Lucy with more tragic tales of the thousands dead from the famine. Destroyed by hail, the crop had been disastrous, and Père Geoffroy seemed in a constant state of fatigue as he hurried about the village performing the last rites, then burying those who had succumbed to the starvation. Of course, our bellies grumbled too, but Mama's edible plants and flowers did stop us from starving. But Leon had not come to tell us about a traveller. "It's your father," he said, panting hard and looking from me to Grégoire. I came across him out along the road. He waved an arm northward. "On his way home, but he's feverish, so I left him resting in a hay shed along the roadside." A rush of heat, then ice cold, struck me. "Is he all right?" "It must be the hunger got to him," Leon said. "I'm going to get the cart. My father and I will carry your papa home." "Where's your mother?" "Out birthing a baby," I said, my voice tight. "We're coming to help," Grégoire said. "We're almost there," Leon waved towards the old stone shelter up ahead. "I hope Papa is all right," I said. "Nothing can happen to him." "We'll take care of your father," Monsieur Bruyère said. "Don't fret, child." "Look, there he is," I cried, pointing to a bent figure shuffling along the roadside on the crest of a small slope. "Your father is a proud man," Monsieur Bruyère said. "I'm not surprised he is trying to get home unaided." Puffs of dust thrown up by the hooves of horses that came galloping over the hill clouded our view. The coach appeared, and as it careened along the road towards us, towards my father, I could see its gilded decoration. "Get out of the way, Papa," Grégoire yelled over and over. "No, Papa, no," I screamed. Mon Dieu, move, run," Monsieur Bruyère shouted. Papa must have been so weak and sick that he didn't hear the hammering hooves behind him or our frantic shouts before him. I don't even think he realized we were there, so close to him. My eyes widened in horror as the coach drew closer to my father. We kept waving our arms and shouting. Surely there must be some way to stop it. My breath caught in my throat, strangling me so I could no longer breathe, as the horses ran down my father without even slowing. Monsieur Bruyère swerved the cart sideways to avoid the coach thundering past us. I gripped my brother's arm as I caught the unmoving gaze of the noble from inside. The cart came to a stop beside Papa's bloodied, broken body. I was numb with shock, and the pain slicing through my breast, a thousand swords at once, was so great I was certain it would kill me. My quivering legs could no longer hold me, and I sank to the ground. "No, no!" I clutched at my brother's legs, dug my nails into his flesh, and beat my fists against his calves. Even before any of us spoke, I think Mama sensed something was very wrong. She said nothing, though, as Monsieur Bruyère told her of the accident. Her face a milk-white mask, her green eyes wide and staring somewhere beyond, her fingers groped about her neck for her angel pendant. She rubbed the old bone between her thumb and forefinger. "Death came instantly, Madame Charpentier," Monsieur Bruyère said. "Emile did not suffer." Still Mama did not flinch. The only movement was the angel pendant rising and falling with her shallow breaths. My mother's tears came only when Grégoire told her the noble didn't even stop. He hadn't even descended from his decorated carriage to check on the commoner he'd run down. My tears came too, burning my cheeks, and I wept long and hard for my father, for the fascinating stories he conjured up to entertain me, tales of werewolves, of flying snakes with boils for eyes, and of green men who looked frightening but were harmless. I sobbed for his stories from the far-off coast, of mermen who broke fishermen's nests and of horned men who stole young girls because there were no horned women. I cried for the touch of his tender hand, which seasons of carpentry and knife grinding had roughened and calloused. Dieu n'existe plus, Mama cried as we buried Papa beside Felix and Felicity. The villagers gasped in horror. How could their healing woman, their midwife, whose skilled hand saved the lives of mothers and babies, no longer believe in God? I will never again enter the church, Mama said. Mama shouldn't say such things, Gregoire hissed at me. She only ignites the fires of rumour as if she herself were holding the blazing flambeau. She's shocked and sad, I said. Mama does not mean what she says. Gregoire and I, too, were shocked and sad, and my anger at that murdering baron wouldn't leave me, the pain like all of Mama's sewing needles jabbing into me at once. We'll find the villain, Gregoire said, his dark eyes grim, his face pale with the rage, and throw rocks at his head until he, too, leaks out all his blood. I'll kill him myself, I said, feeling the first stirring inside me, a bitter hatred of every noble person.